Welcome back to Why Are We Like This, the podcast that treats Florida like the active crime scene it is. I am David Quinones. I am your host. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Tomas Kennedy. What's up, Tomas?
Just chilling. This is the week that Florida Dems are being extra Florida Dem. We'll get into it. But
I'm here
from New York just watching, like, God, I'm so glad I'm out. And just like Michael Corleone, just when I thought I was out, pull me back in.
We're gonna get to that. But first, I also want to introduce my other co-host, the Quisach Haderach himself. He's out here bagging emperor's daughters. It's Gerald Doherty. Hey, Gerald.
Whatever he said, I.
Oh, you didn't see Dune 2?
No, I did not see Dune 2, but all right. I'll be honest.
I blew it for you.
Well, I'm gonna watch it anyway. I liked Dune 1 for the bagpipes, which I associate culturally with funerals. Being Irish, that's the only time I ever hear bagpipes. But now I hear it when fictional emperors are walking across large swaths of sand, which have the same emotional register for me.
I don't want to derail the pod.
Here we go.
It was mid. The first one was mid. I
thought it was good.
I didn't read the books.
The first one I thought was mid too. Yeah. I thought the first one was
whatever. Very watchable, okay. Very well made. I think David Lynch's Dune is better, aside mm-hmm. from the horrible ending due to studio interference. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was just way too long, kind of boring. Like, visually, aesthetically, it was like kind of one tone. I thought there was like a lot of opportunity for like, you know, like psychedelic color.
Yeah.
I thought the dialogue was atrocious. Again, it's worth watching. I would recommend people watch it. It's not a terrible film, but like, if you're a Dune fan, which I am, I don't want to sound pretentious, but sure. I like the books. Mm-hmm. I just was like, I think that, like, there was a lot more potential there. And also, like, Villeneuve, like, I like his films. He's a little too self-serious for me. It's like, chill out.
He's sort of the Christopher Nolan.
There was
you know, he's got like a lot of Christopher
There was
Nolan
no fun there. In the first movie. Like, all the fun that I had was completely accidental. Where someone would say something like, use the voice to move a cup of water with your like voice or your head or whatever. And then Timothy Chalamet just starts screaming at his mother. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on here, but it is very funny.
Yeah, he's like, bring me a cup of water.
And I'm just like, don't talk to your mother that way.
It's
show some respect.
It's rude and childish.
Yeah.
I had, and not to further derail us onto the into the dunes of what is it, Azarac or
who cares? I've never read a book. Whatever it is, Arrakis.
Okay. I read the. I did. Book, I read the book.
I'm not I read. You can't make me.
I
read,
read three and a, during a very boring summer of mine when I was 13 years old, and I was staying in a bungalow in the Poconos with people that I did, with parts of my family that I didn't like, and I had nothing to do. I read three and a half of the books. The first three and a half books. The fourth book gets to a point where you're just literally, you set it down and you're like, what the fuck am I looking at? What am I reading? It's absolute gibberish. It's great, but it's gibberish. Sorry, Tomas. No, it is. It's insane.
I was going to agree. You only really need to read up until Dune Messiah. Dune Messiah. That's
but
it.
What I was reminded of as I got all these like floods of memories as a 13-year-old who didn't really truly understand what I was reading. I also found it to be very self-serious, especially the first one. And the best antidote for a thing that's too serious, in my opinion, is Jason Momoa. He's great, right? They didn't let him have any fun. But in the third or the fourth book, there's a plot line, and I guarantee that the movies will never get to this, where they clone him, bring him back, and make him a sex warrior to fight off like a bunch of sex nuns that attack and invade from like five galaxies away or something like that. And I'm like, that would be fun. That would be a funny ass fucking movie.
That's why I like the David Lynch version better, even though the ending, they fucked it up majorly because of studio interference again. But it was just more silly. It was more psychedelic. It was weirder. And like, you know, like Dune is like a six, like creature of the 60s. Like it should, I don't know if it needs to feel like dated, but it should feel like fucked up and weird. And it wasn't weird enough for me. I'm sorry. It just wasn't weird.
So back on track. today we're going to be talking a little bit about Super Tuesday. The fellas have some thoughts, and we're going to hear them out. What they what their takeaways were from the kind of anticlimactic, you know,
more like boring Tuesday.
Yeah,
absolute boring. Yeah.
Sleeper Tuesday. That's what I said. Sleepy Tuesday.
I like it. But first, I was thinking we could address a few pieces of local news. First, in your neck of the woods, this tweeted right before we got on the air to record from Rebecca Lewis at City and State. New Governor Hochul, Kathy Hochul, announces that she is deploying 750 National Guard members onto the New York City subways to conduct bag checks, in addition to another 250 law enforcement members. She is also proposing a bill to ban people convicted of violent crime on the subway from public transit. And that part, I guess, would involve some, like live background checks as you're literally moving from place to place. So coming soon to a neighborhood near you, Tomas. Sounds like fun.
As you noted, when we were discussing this segment, these people are turning me into a libertarian and a First Amendment auditor. And I would literally look so fucking suspicious and have the sketchiest bag in the vicinity of National Guardsmen just to have these motherfuckers come up to me and try to search my bag. And I will absolutely say, no, you cannot search my bag. And everybody should do the same. What the fuck is this? 750 fucking guys with fucking fatigues and like weapons on the subway. Like, what the, how the fuck are you going to fucking enforce this violent crime shit? Like, what? It's going to be like scan, like fucking Minority Report now? Like, fuck yeah. That, man. And look, the subway can be, a sketchy place to navigate. Trust me, I live here. You know, my partner lives here. Like, this is not needed. Like, yeah. The subway is not escape from New York. You know, all just like how we've discussed at the border, this is, again, all political theater by Democrats who are like, well, I'm tough on crime. I'm tough on the border.
Yeah.
Just nonsense. More nonsense on top of nonsense.
While my opponent, Curtis Sliwa, was complaining, I was actually doing things. You know, it's like, yeah, wait. Like,
this is money that could be spent on actually improving the dilapidated and crumbling MTA system that remains an engineering marvel, and I'm glad it's there.
Yeah.
Wow, it's miles ahead of anything we've had in Miami. But it was built in, like, the early 1900s. Like, and it feels and looks it, you know?
And smells it, if I can be quite honest. No, to your point, like, every complaint I've had about the subway from people who live in the subway is the weekend schedule, because they're constantly doing construction for no reason. People get on trains and end up on the opposite side of town, and they can't get anything through in Albany to try to ameliorate this. People will spend money on subway as long as it puts money into the security state. Like, that's basically my read of this is you can invest money in the MTA, but only to put boots and uniforms on it to give the illusion of security to, you know, middle class, upper middle class professionals, what have you. There's not going to be a single person whose life is made safer or better by having National Guardsmen come and search, you know, bags at random. You would think like this is, you would think that an attack just happened in New York City. This is the kind of response you put on the subways if an attack just happened. But the attack is just, I have to see people who are mentally ill. I have to see people who are homeless. I have to see people I don't want to see like the reverberations of like the social and economic system that I live in. I want to be insulated.
That's working out.
Yeah.
Well
so
for me,
in lieu of that, yes, a uniform guard would make me feel a little bit, but that's all this is the illusion of security.
Yeah. And let's derail this a little bit. I want to tell you guys about my recent visit to Eagle Pass, Texas, the border, where I saw how a public park, Shelby Park, that hosts the International Bridge in Eagle Pass to Mexico has been basically commandeered and closed down by the state of Texas and covered in concertina barbed wire, covered in with shipping containers that are being used as makeshift walls, which, by the way, the residents are furious because whenever there's a flood during the rainy season, they're going to get dislodged and become missiles, you know, cruising through the fucking Rio Grande.
Yeah, slow speed. Yeah,
Florida exactly. Fish and wildlife vehicles everywhere. Everywhere. Dozens of Florida fish and wildlife vehicles everywhere. And tying it to this subway story, National Guardsmen everywhere with, you know, automatic weapons just standing around everywhere under the hot sun with nothing to do, doing nothing, just chatting, walking around, sitting down, you know. And I got to canoe on the Rio Grande because this man, Jesse Fuentes, who used to have a kayaking company, he, when they closed Shelby Park, the public ramp into the Rio Grande was closed. So now it's very difficult to get into the Rio Grande, and the Rio Grande is being, you know, patrolled by these like fish and wildlife, you know, airboats from Florida and whatever. And he sued the state of Florida, the state of Texas, and they had to allow him access to the Rio Grande for his company. So he's the one of the few people that can take people in it. And just miles and miles, you know, we did like about 10 miles or so down the Rio Grande, miles and miles of just, again, barbed wire, shipping containers, environmental destruction, the river inaccessible to people. And then on the Mexican side, you have vegetation, green. Ahead, across from Eagle Pass, you literally have a public park with a walkway in the river. You know, just nonsense. And it just triggers me so much that we are deploying these National Guardsmen now. And again, a related, you know, like political theater, right? Which is like, we get tough on the border. Well, here in New York, we're going to get tough on crime.
Yeah.
Just nonsense, pathetic bullshit by unserious politicians with unserious solutions to problems that don't exist.
Just to paint a picture for the audience, if you looked at the video that Tomas posted and said one of these is the wealthiest country in human history, you would not pick the one that looks like a bomb just went off and everyone had to scramble. Like, that's what it looks like down there. Whereas on the Mexican side, it looks pretty and beautiful. And it looks like outside should look. It doesn't look like a war zone, but it's been made into a war zone.
It doesn't look like a shittier Children of Man.
Yeah.
Gerald, isn't there like a political theory about this though? And I'm only paraphrasing it because I think I don't really remember it that well. But something about like I'm familiar with the phrase of like the frontier comes home, and it's like the idea that what empire has wrought in other places. It always ends up like it. You end up having to build up you basically have to cut off certain parts, like swaths of empire, right? Of the homeland in the empire, because that has to be just steep walls. That has to be make it less approachable.
So, sorry to interject, but I just wrote this like 2,000 word piece on Truthout about the border and the democratic anti-immigrant triangulation and my visit there. And I actually used that quote, the war always comes home.
Yeah. I think we discussed it when Matt Leck was on the show. It's part of the farce of the people who say, I don't want to invest in forever wars abroad, but I want to have drones and electric fence and, self-driving tanks at the, that is basically, you want to basically pay the same defense contractors like Raytheon and Boeing and whatever, but you want to fight a forever war on the border. Like, it's just a matter of where the money gets shuffled. It's not a matter of shuffling the money. It's a matter of just reallocating those resources. But you still want to be paying and be paid by the same people. It's to maintain the same relationships.
Yep.
So from a disaster on the border to our own homemade disasters here, otherwise known as the Florida Democratic Party, I have this saved under the tab on our notes. Look at this shit. And here's the shit on the link. It's the Miami Herald. Just again, a little context if you're not aware of like what the Florida Democratic Party has been up to for the past few years. Apart from just hemorrhaging voters and losing constantly, you might be wondering to yourself, hey, guys, fellas, you guys are in the know. What happened to that $1 million Take Back Florida program from last summer that was supposed to cut 35% of the GOP's lead here? I don't know. I mean, I have the numbers in front of me, even though, by the way, the Florida Department of State's website is down. It's been down for like ever. I don't know. Like, I know. And nobody talks. It's just whatever. Like, nothing works. Who fucking cares?
Another theme of our show. Nothing works.
Yeah. Nothing fucking works. Who cares? So if you look back February 2023, before I read you into this little news item, state of Florida had 4.8 million registered Democrats. Today we have 4.36 million registered Democrats, 5.3 million registered Republicans back in 2023, of February of 2023, and 5.5 million today. You guys might be wondering, why am I calling out February 2023? As the specific date? Is it just because it was almost about a year ago? No, it was because that was the time that the Florida Democrats got some new leadership, some fresh blood taking over for
something new.
Something new, folks. Fast forward to March 4th, this headline from the Miami Herald. Leader of the Miami-Dade Democrats is suspended by Florida party chairwoman. We should mention, just as like a matter of, I don't know, like transparency, that this article is about Robert Dempster, who's a friend of, I think, all three of ours, right? Like, I don't know if you knew him, Gerald, but yeah.
That's my boy.
Like,
you?
That's, yeah, Robert's a cool guy. We love Robert, and he's awesome. I mean, for all the faults with the party that he's so like, strongly advocates for, and for all the disagreements we have with him about like saying fuck this fucking party, give up on it, pal, he is still a great guy, a wonderful man. So this article, with elections for now that we've made our bias completely clear, with elections for local, state, and federal posts just months away, Florida Democratic Party chairwoman Nikki Fried is suspending the head of the Miami-Dade Democratic Party, according to party officials. On Monday, Fried called Robert Dempster, who's helmed the party county party since 2021, to ask for his resignation. Dempster declined to step down, according to party officials, prompting Fried to suspend him from the job. The decision on Monday came just over a month after Florida Democratic Party officials sent a letter to Dempster notifying him that the Miami-Dade Party was out of compliance with the state's party's rules and bylaws. Bears mentioning here, Robert was not the only one called out. The head of the county party and the I don't think it's mentioned in this article because it's the Miami Herald as opposed to the Florida Herald. Mm-hmm. But I believe it's Franklin counties
and Palm Beach, Franklin and Palm Beach
County. Quote. Due to ongoing and unresolved issues and failure to comply with the rules that govern all local parties, the Florida Democratic Party has made the decision to suspend the chair of the Miami-Dade Democratic Party and rebuild in 2024 because the cost of inaction is too high, Fried said. There's a lot of bullshit in this article. Mm-hmm. And I on this specific topic, there's really not many people who are better at cutting through it than Tomas. So I figured maybe, like, before I just like shit on Nikki Fried, which I want to shit on Nikki Fried because I haven't seen, like, and this is saying something, I haven't seen a party leader as ineffective as her. I have some numbers to back that up, by the way. I find her to just be like the most off-putting. Like, she's a person that I cheer to lose. I cheer for her to lose. That's a bad thing if that's supposed to be like your party's, you know, the head of your party in your state. But apart from my animus, like, Tomas, what's really going on and what's not being said in this article, and what's your take on it?
Yeah, so, you know, basically what's happening, and I'll just be as real as possible here, is that the Florida Democratic Party under Nikki Fried serves as an exploratory committee for her future statewide run, which would be her third statewide run, right? The same thing that happened while she was agriculture commissioner. Remember when she would stick her face in all of our gas pumps? You know, a complete misuse of her public office. But she's used the party to put her face and, you know, personal brand and possibly almost every single creative and piece of communication that the party has deployed since her tenure started. And what's happening here is that the party is basically using obscure technicalities to take the extreme action of removing these three chairs. And what is that technicality? Is that they basically made an endorsement without having 90% of the precincts within that county filled by precinct captains. Something that I believe almost none, if any, DEC has actually been able to accomplish. And they point to the endorsement of now former Commissioner Sabina Cobo, who quite frankly, you know, we're not huge fans of in this podcast, but it was a vote decided by the membership of the Miami-Dade Democratic Party, right? And by the way, Nikki Fried, acting as FDP chair, also endorsed Sabina Cobo, by the way. So they're removing these county party chairs, which, by the way, all of them are unpaid. They're all volunteers. Yeah. The only person who's getting paid here is actually Nikki Fried, who has a salary as Florida Democratic Party state chair, and her salary was actually raised during her tenure, right? And these county parties operate with almost zero administrative and financial support from the state party. In fact, I have here a statement that went out earlier today from the now acting vice chair of the Miami-Dade Democratic Party, Maria Elena Lopez, who is supportive of Robert, as well as other members of the Miami-Dade Democratic Party, in which she says, as Democrats organizing the largest Democratic county in the state, we have been doing this work with zero financial or administrative support from the Florida Democratic Party. Undaunted by this vacuum, the Miami-Dade Democratic Party has hired a full-time paid field director, fully funded through local donations. We are currently the only DEC in the state with paid full-time staff. So, and my question, look, listener, you know we don't like Trump, right? I mean, we can safely say that. We're not fans [S2] Right. [S1] Of Trump as much as we may joke around. But we're not particularly invested at this moment, especially in the prospects of the Democratic Party as a whole.
Right.
But like, fair is fair, you know? These are unpaid volunteers working at a local party to do work in a very hostile environment with almost zero financial support, right? And under Nikki Fried's tenure, as you've noted, David, the voter registration deficit in the state has grown to, I believe, almost 800,000. So what's happening now is a scapegoating of local leaders. A scapegoating that makes zero strategic sense, because let me delineate to you what's going to happen now. So now she suspended these three county party chairs, right? So if you're a Democrat that's really invested in the Florida Democrats winning elections in 2024, listen to what's about to happen. They're now, the Central Executive Committee of the Florida Democratic Party needs to vote on the removal of these three party chairs. And they need to certify it by a 2/3 margin. That's a large margin. And this is going to happen in a meeting, an in-person meeting, by the way, which takes resources and money to host in May. So we have March, April, and May of bad headlines, Dems in disarray.
Yeah.
They've opened themselves up to a lawsuit. I don't know if that'll happen. I have no idea.
At least it's not an election
year. They're scaring away donors all in an election year. So they have this vote in May. And if these votes are successful to remove each of these chairs, then the local DECs, the local county parties, have 45 days to schedule a special election, which would happen in either late May or even June, maybe even July, right? So then you have to have the whole intra-party bullshit of like the local elections and whatever. And then, you know, just then, after you have the special election, a new chair would take power. And then you have to have the actual election after November, right? In December or January or whatever, when they have the reorganization meetings, because these terms are almost up, by the way. Question to you, David and Gerald. Does this make sense to you guys?
No. The tip off for me that this was a bunch of shit was, what is it? One of the things they lay at Robert's feet is the consistent failure to meet quorum. in the county part, which, like, when I was down in Miami.
No, Gerald.
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now.
Yeah.
Like, again.
Yeah.
Just the facts.
Yeah.
They meet Quorum consistently.
Yeah. But, like, I remember when I was down in Miami, Dade County, the party consistently failing to meet Quorum because the roles were stacked with voters from Steve Battelle's statewide campaign who never showed back up once they were no longer needed. We couldn't even pass a condemnation of the, was it the photos of Darren Rainey's scalded skin that were released in 2017? And the party couldn't even pass a condemnation of the failure to bring charges on that front because there was no quorum and hadn't been quorum for such a long, and no one was laying that at the feet of the county chair because everyone knew what the shot was. Battelle got his seat. Everyone knew that the roles were going to have to be purged once that was over. But the idea that this would be laid at the feet of Juan Cuba, that never crossed anyone's mind.
No. And the roles were eventually cleaned. That's how we got that resolution passed. But it's just destructive nonsense being pushed forward by a chair who, quite frankly, is using the party as a vehicle for her own personal ambition. And listener, you know, we here at The Wire, we like this podcast. Yeah. We're not bought out by anyone. No one pays me. I can say whatever I want. I don't have any career prospects on this, so I'll just lay it out for you. Daniela Levin Cava, the mayor of Miami-Dade County, has been making moves for a possible statewide run office in the future. You might like that. You might hate that. Well, up to you. But guess what? Nikki Fried and Daniela Levin Cava have notorious tension historically. Yeah. And I can tell you that from a personal phone call that Nikki Fried once had with me where she like talked major shit about Daniela Levin Cava and her consultant, Christian Oliver, who we're not particularly big fans of in this podcast either. But the reason why I'm telling you this is we're not taking sides here between Daniela Levin Cava or Nikki Fried or whatever. It's that this is not about the health of the Florida Democratic Party and its efficiency. This is what it's always been and what we've always tried to tell you. This is about consultants and party operatives trying to wrestle control of infrastructure where money is funneled during election cycles. Because remember, these local counties, DECs, can accept unlimited contributions, unlike campaigns and PACs, because they want to control these structures for their own personal political ambitions. And you know what? That's the system that we live in. We live in a representative democracy. Personal political ambitions is the name of the game. Personal political projects is the name of the game, unfortunately, you know? But, you know, right now, they're actually just creating chaos and being destructive in this gigantic and idiotic battle of egos.
They're pointing fingers. If you're going to turn your state party into just a vanity project for one of your like more prominent state, you know, electeds or formerly electeds, and you're going to undertake drastic action like this, where you have one of what used to be at least one of the bulwarks for the Democrats in Miami-Dade County. Like, I mean, I'm not going to say it's like the way that, you know, New York is to New York State or anything like that, but it is a pretty, like, Broward, Dade, and Orlando, or Orange County, are kind of New York City to New York State, really, if you in the aggregate combined, right?
They're the breadbasket of Democratic votes in Florida.
Historically,
And for you to come down and tell one of the, like, one-third of that breadbasket, actually two-thirds if you go two, or half if you count Palm Beach County, which, you know, which I don't know what the story is there, but, hi, I'm the lady that just lost in my 12 months half a million voters. In 12 months, I lost half a million voters. And here's what my plan is. Oh, yeah. No, I know we were already doing kind of badly over the course of, like, since 2021 or no, 2018, really. We'd been losing, you know, voters, trickling, a slow loss of our what at one time was like, what, 125,000 registration advantage. And you know, it slowly creeped up, slowly got worse. And then I became chair of the state party and I slammed my fucking foot on the gasoline. And now we in that just the 4.866 million state registered Democratic voters in 12 months ago. 12 months ago. Today is 4.36.
They deployed a surrogate today on Actualidad Radio to basically cape for what they're doing. And, you know, I was listening in and Roberto Tejera, the host, was asking them about the 800,000, you know, voter registration deficit. And they keep giving this bullshit thing. Well, it's actually inactive voters that haven't voted in the past election, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, they're not voting.
Yeah, they're not voting.
They're not voting. What is the solution? So to this point, Roberto asked her, is the Democratic National Committee actually, because we see all the little, you know, round tables and whatever, is that, are they giving money? Money. She had to admit, no, they're not. Why? Why are they not giving money? And the host asked, is there a statewide campaign plan that has been presented? Incredibly, she said, no.
No.
And you know why? She's like, well, we're waiting on the county parties to give us the campaign plans so we can put forward this. You know, they're like, let's.
And that's leadership.
Yeah. Passing the buck to the people they're purging from the party in the first place.
Passing the buck. I know, she did all the county parties.
The unpaid people.
Yeah, you're unpaid volunteers who are learning as they go along, trying their very best. Are not campaign professionals, are underfunded. We're waiting to get this amount, you know, aggregate of like 64 or dozen of campaign plans from the county so that we can put it all together and put, you know, a statewide campaign plan. It's like, baby, we're in March, like 2024. Yeah. Like y'all need the campaign plan yesterday. Like, how about you show some leadership, you deploy some staffers to these counties, and you get the fucking plans going, or you just write a statewide plan yourself. And the reality is that unserious people in an unserious party, and that's where I'll leave it.
I just want to leave one last thing because I'm a dirty piece of shit PR communications person, and I can't help but think that way. And as I look at the stories that came out about this and I pull up the numbers, I see a narrative that if I wish Robert could afford me, man. But if he could, I would be able to spin him a narrative that is not that far off from reality. Because what I see here is I see registration numbers from, again, February 2023 for not just the state, but for Miami-Dade County. And yeah, Miami-Dade County, like everywhere in Florida, has hemorrhaged Democratic voters. But guess what? They've only hemorrhaged it at about a 7.5%. In that same period of time statewide, we've lost 13%.
So half as much, almost half the rate.
I could very easily paint as a PR guy, a narrative where Robert has been a bulwark against Nikki Fried's incompetence and has actually managed to slow the loss of voter registration down here, despite one of the worst state party leaders and state parties in the nation. That's pretty much all I have to say. Robert, that one's for free if you hear this. Run with it, bro.
I'll send them the pod and then you can invoice them later.
Moving on to what we had as our main topic, which was yesterday's Super Tuesday. Was Florida part of Super Tuesday? Dear listener, I hear you asking yourself, no, we never are. What are you new around here? No, Florida is not.
Also, like the Florida Democrats canceled your primary, so you don't even get a primary.
So you don't even know. Don't worry, baby. We know what you want. It's okay.
We're not kidding. Like if you wanted to vote for Joe Biden, like you could. You still can. But if you wanted to vote for Marianne Williamson or whatever, you can't. They literally did not put the names on the ballot.
Right. 2020. It was actually exactly 23 years ago today that Destiny's Child came out with I'm a Survivor. And as we put a bow on yet another Super Tuesday, guys, its meaning has never been greater than today when, after a bruising primary, we finally shed ourselves of the assorted LaToya Luckett and Latavia Robersons We're finally left with our Beyonce and Kelly, and it looks like it's going to be Donald and Sleepy Joe.
What?
Yeah.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that.
Isn't that weird? How did that turn out that way?
Yeah. We didn't call that a year ago.
No. So, I don't know. Do you guys have anything to say about Dean Phillips and Nikki Haley? Any last words as they fade into obscurity, hopefully never to be heard from again?
Dude, Dean Phillips is just pathetic.
Yeah. I'm not sold that this is the last we'll hear from Nikki Haley. I don't think she stuck around this long just to disappear now. I think she knew she was never going to win it. I mean, I was shocked by Vermont. I was shocked that she won anything at all. I'm sure internally maybe she was as well. I don't think she's hung around this long just to disappear. I think maybe she's making a bet that Donald Trump will not be as strong a general election candidate as he appears to be in March of this year, as he will be in November, and trying to position herself for maybe 2028 or the I told you so candidate, which would make the ultimate loser in this whole situation Ron DeSantis, because he was supposed to be the Trump alternative, and now he's not even going to be that should Trump lose in November.
I want to ask you guys something really quickly, because I just remembered it, and we haven't had an episode where we've been able to talk about this, but I'm sure you guys have seen it. These sort of weird rumblings and rumors that, like, Ron DeSantis has quietly not turned off key elements of his campaign or key elements of his infrastructure or something, I guess. And the thinking being that, like, oh, well, if Donald just, you know, if the KFC catches up to him at some point, you know, all the triglycerides take their toll, you know, maybe he steps in. I don't know. Do you guys know anything about that?
I will say, I think if Trump does meet an untimely end, I think there would be a scramble at the convention, obviously, by all these people, especially the ones that have delegates. Not that, Nikki has like 89, DeSantis is like 9, you know, the delegate haul by anyone that's not named Donald Trump doesn't matter much, but it's more about who is closer to the base. But, you know, some people are saying, you know, Ron DeSantis could unsuspend his campaign at any point. Like, that's not happening. Unless something serious happens to Trump, he is out for the count.
I do think it's delusional on DeSantis's part to think that should there be a scramble that he would have a shot even against Nikki Haley.
Like that they would scramble to him. No,
yeah.
I disagree. I don't think the party would nominate Nikki. Maybe somebody else. Granted, but
not I'm saying in a head-to-head with Nikki that people would turn to Ron after he got second place in Iowa and then exited. I think even just sticking around for as long as she did. Nikki showed she's able to crawl on much more broken glass.
In classic Walt fashion, we don't have a dog in this race, really. Right. But like, isn't it weird? Isn't it strange that like that could absolutely happen to either party tomorrow? Yes. And it doesn't seem like there's a single.
But like, it's not.
We don't deserve it. We've been bad. We've been too bad. We're bad people. We're horrible. And on the inside, we're garbage.
Listener, it's Groundhog Day. Yeah. It's Trump versus Biden again, and you have to swallow it.
Right. Just wait until 2028, Trump Biden. When
you don't have to vote, but you have to endure it. You have to be subjected to it.
Sure. We all have to be there together. What other takeaways did you guys have from Super Tuesday? I was obviously, you know, the overperformance of uncommitted across ballots. I thought that was something of note, Gerald.
Yeah. We were talking, Tomas, before you got on. The two things, and let me know what your thoughts are. My two takeaways were I thought there would be a good amount of uncommitted. I did not think you'd hit as high as 20. You know, the low to mid 20s in certain states. And then on the Republican side, Trump's like across the board weakness in the suburbs, especially among suburban white women, those are your up for grabs voters in a rematch with Trump and Biden. Mine were that plus uncommitted were my two takeaways. But what did you see?
Actually, 100% what you were going to say. I think Donald Trump, based on, you know, his reports in places like Massachusetts, Utah, Virginia, you know, like he was in the 60s, you know, and you're right, you know, and in the suburbs, he has a problem. that being said, you know, Joe Biden lost American Samoa. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
but he did lose American Samoa.
Who was that guy? Who was that guy that he lost to?
Jason something.
Yeah. I don't know, but he called for a ceasefire. So
Jason Statham.
Yeah. But I will say, as somebody that worked for SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, in 2016 as a labor organizer, and I remember the union leaders freaking out about the Rust Belt and Hillary Clinton's prospects, begging her to go to Michigan, something that she really didn't do. I think there's we're not saying anything new here. There's a lot of fucking flashing, you know, red warning lights right now for the Biden campaign. I mean, you know, the results in Michigan and Minnesota were quite frankly atrocious,
yeah,
you know, for the Biden campaign, especially with young people, you know, Arab voters, Muslim voters, Black voters. So, you know, I think the Rust Belt starting to look real dicey for
real Biden. Rusty. Like,
real rusty. Obviously, Florida is off the fucking map.
Yeah.
You know, Georgia looks wobbly as fuck. You know, Arizona, Nevada look wobbly. So, you know, it looks bad for him, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Again, both candidates have their weakness, right? I mean, we're not saying that Trump is going to win or that Biden's going to win,
right,
but it looks bad for both of them in different ways.
I was offering this to David before you got on. The likelihood that Trump wins the popular vote, but Biden wins the electoral college, even by a small margin,
yeah,
feels more likely after these results than it did before.
AKA the funniest outcome.
That's honestly the one I would put money on now if I had to.
I don't know. I still don't see Trump winning the popular vote, but okay. I could see him narrowly improving his 2020 map and taking it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying there'll be some great surge of pro MAGA voters, but more people who Biden is counting on to turn out for him just not doing so.
When Tomas joined the call, we were talking, he must have been like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? We were in the middle of a conversation about this sort of throwback early Trump era conversations online about electoral, you know, social engineering, basically. Mm-hmm. And the way that that relates to now is going back to our core theme, Florida, is it almost feels like Florida has become this sort of sinkhole for the conservatives who might have swung purple states, where you throw your hands up in the air, I've had enough of fucking Lansing and all the fucking libs and all these fucking lefties and commies. I'm taking my money I made from my Mitsubishi dealership and I'm moving down to Stuart, Florida. I'm getting a place in fucking St. Pete, and fuck this. And we've talked about that story. That's a story that's been going on millions of times over as the population here has surged the last few years.
David, you I think you said it on a previous podcast that we've done, that Ron DeSantis's biggest fan is probably
Chuck Schumer,
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, because you're absolutely true. You know, Florida has become a Republican vote sinkhole. In fact, you know, I was tweeting about this. There was a Florida State report recently that talked about the demographic death spiral that Florida's in. Basically, death rates are overtaking birth rates, right? Yeah. Which is bad for any economy, creates all types of problem with like pensions, taxes, work shortages, blah, blah, blah. But another thing that was discussed in the state report is that a lot of like boomers are moving in and young people are moving out because of the cost of living crisis in the state. And, you know, those young people generally tend to skew a little bit more sort of a progressive, left, liberal side, whatever you want to call it. And these boomers are overwhelmingly fucking Republican. And again, they are coming from places like, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin.
But they're coming here with money already, and they're coming here to consume and die. And that's it.
Yeah.
And also fuck things up. But like, you know, it's the worst possible. And then it's the worst possible equation that you can have for a place. And then you throw in like the potential salve on it, right? Which was in its own way very cynical, but has been the American way for like a couple hundred years. Hey, let's bring in some more people hey, our population's aging. They all have, you know, fucking radiation poisoning from the freeways, and they've got feet growing out of their fucking eyeballs. So everybody's dying. Let's bring in some new people. Hey, look at all these other countries just to the south of us with people begging to come here. No, can't have that. Absolutely fucking not. No. That's communism, guys. I'm sorry. I don't really know why. It just is. So I don't know, man. And you see it. You guys, you do feel it. Like, there aren't enough people anymore in Miami, like real people, to go out and do like real work. I spent the day in Miami Beach, and I hate to do these fucking like, who is not Krugman? Who's the fucking New York Times columnist that always does the like, I talked to a cab driver?
Thomas Friedman.
The Friedman shit. I hate to do the Friedman shit, but like I did. I spent a day. I've been out and about a little bit more lately, and this isn't like a, oh, my Starbucks doesn't have enough people working and the lines are too long shit, but it feels like things are nothing's working, man. Like, nothing's working properly down here. Everything is falling apart, and there's no people to do anything about it.
When I was at Eagle Pass, Texas, the center, the epicenter of the border crisis, the calmest, sleepiest little town, you know, like pretty nice, you know, but like there was just no sense of crisis in the community. Looking around, you know, like unless you get close to the border, like you just would never guess that anything's happening. And guess what you saw across the city? Now hiring signs everywhere.
We're in such a fucking, like, I hate, this is the reason that I hate election year. Because everybody defaults to the dumbest parts of all the narratives. Everybody defaults to, like, what you were talking about earlier. The, like, you want to harass people who might be criminals? I want to harass them even worse. You know, like, I'll show you how serious I am. I'm going to build the fucking wall out of paper mache. Like, I'm going to do it myself. And everybody just kind of, like, retrenches. Everything gets worse. And I remember, like, I'm stupid and old enough to remember that, like, thinking that these were supposed to be the years where you actually were able to pull the open Overton window open a little bit more. Like, this should be the time where you could be like, hey, you know what? Medicare for all, right, guys? Right? Fucking Medicare for all, right? And like, quietly, nobody fucking supports you from the back, you know? It's just like, you start a slow clap that goes nowhere. And that's what it feels like now. It feels like this. It's all the worst instincts. It's all the worst things that we want.
We don't have a crisis. We don't have a border crisis in this country. We don't have a crime crisis in this country. What we have is a crisis of unserious politicians committing massive public corruption. You know what I mean? And then scapegoating, you know, other people, pitting people against each other to try to cover that up. That's the real crisis in America. And it's up from both parties, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I think we can leave it there. What do you guys think? Anything else you want to mention? Tomas, you got any plugs?
Trump versus Biden. Get ready.
Get ready. Yeah. Part due.
Part due.
Dune 2.
We're doing this.
We're doing this. We're doing this.